Book of Daniel, chapter 3. It's 30 verses in this chapter. It's an interesting chapter because it deals with basically Nebuchadnezzar in an effort to establish his national religion and the faith of some young men that will not bow down to that particular idol. And I think that we'll find as we think in terms of the introduction we gave to the book of Daniel that the first six chapters are actually practical and historical. In other words, they're dealing more on the practical side. Now, there is some doctrine. There always is doctrine in the Word of God. But that part of it's practical. The emphasis will be on prophecy, chapter 7 on through 12, with some practical intermingled into it. So there's an emphasis in certain portions of the book of Daniel. But this is, I think, an interesting chapter. We'll try to get it in a historical perspective so that we'll maybe see some of the, what would you call it, mental thinking of Nebuchadnezzar, why he's doing what he's doing, and in light of some things that he's already experienced. Now, chapter 2, remember, he finally came to the conclusion that Daniel's God was the God that ought to be honored and served. Well, now, in chapter 3, we find him out in the plains of Dura setting up an image. But we'll try to give you some thoughts about that and challenge you thinking a little bit and see some things here that would be a real help to us as we just encourage your own faith in the Lord. And you never know whenever you might be called upon to take a particular stand, and you'll need some encouragement to take the stand that you ought to take for the Lord. So let's read these 30 verses, then we'll come back and deal with the outline. Everybody, I assume, has an outline in hand. If you don't have, we'll get you one. Okay, everybody's got an outline. It said, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plains of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, and the treasurers, and the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. Whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. Thou, king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee, they serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. He will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury. The form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. He commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, rose up in haste, and spake, and said unto his counselors, Did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. He answered and said, Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth, come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. The princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trust in him, have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which spake or speak anything against or amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces. Their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Quite a lengthy reading, but it is an interesting story, historical fact that is presented to us. And let's just now look into this and analyze a few things and let it speak to our hearts. First of all, Nebuchadnezzar built his image and then called for the dedication in verses 1 through 7. The image is described and set up in verse 1. Now, this image would have been extremely long and very narrow. Some have felt like quite possibly that because of the measurements, and that's what we're given, is just the height and the breadth. We're kind of like the Aggies, you know, they had this particular pole that they wanted to measure. And they had two or three Aggies out here trying to hold this pole up, and one fella trying to pull a tape measure down to the side of it. And a guy came by and said, Well, why don't you lay that pole down and measure it? They said, we don't want to know how long it is. We want to know how high it is. Well, this is 60 cubits high. It very well may have been put on a base or a pedestal type underneath it so that the image would be more in proportion. And we're only told it is an image of gold. I would not be surprised to find out whenever we have opportunity to ask about it that it was an image made maybe of Nebuchadnezzar himself, with the emphasis being that he wanted to move into the realm of deity and be recognized as one of basically final authority. And so we have it described for us. It is an image of gold. And apparently he had in mind, in his thinking, the dream that Daniel had interpreted now something like probably 20 years before, where he was the head of gold. So he made his image of gold. It is 60 cubits high and it's 6 cubits wide, set up in the plains of Dura in the province of Babylon. And certainly we could give you a couple of reasons why we feel like it would be set up out in a plain area, plains area. First of all, Nebuchadnezzar was a man of extreme pride, and he likely didn't want any other distractions. He didn't want anything there but that image. So he would choose an isolated place to set up the image so that there would not be any competitions. When you move forward in time and get over into the Grecian Empire, you'll find that Babylon had its gods, don't misunderstand, and they had their system of worship, from which comes a lot of the error that is still alive and well on planet Earth today. But the Greeks had a way of just having multiple gods. And if you were to go into a Greek city, you might have, for example, one main avenue and just be temple after temple to various gods and goddesses that would be available. And so there would be choices to be made. Well, Nebuchadnezzar has eliminated the choices. There's one religion that he's wanting folks to give themselves to. Now, I'll say this just by way of an aside, that this is certainly one of the methods of binding a people together. You realize that if you're really going to bind a people together, you're going to have one of two things, either a common religion or a common object of hatred that will bind the folks together. And in this case, he chooses religion. Hitler chose the hatred side as he focused the hatred upon the Jewish folks. In other words, he made them a common enemy to all of the state, as we would think of it, or in the cases we would term the nation. And so he was binding likely his empire together with a common religion so that there would not be any divisions in that sense of the word. And certainly the area is large enough to accommodate the crowd out in the plains of Dura. It's will be an expanded place, so there's not any reason that the folks can't come and attend. In other words, there's room to attend. So he was using some, I suppose you'd have to say, genius from a worldly standpoint as he prepares and brings this group together. By this time, Nebuchadnezzar has now forgotten the God of, or the great God of Daniel. To some degree, he's forgotten it. And this is not uncommon. Sometimes there are great events in our lives, but they wane in sharpness as time elapses. And sometimes that's a benefit. And if it's a tragedy that needs to lose some of the real sharpness of it, we're thankful that memories do dull to some degree. But on the other hand, if we're not careful and don't refresh ourselves, we can forget what God has done for us. It's the reason I like now and then to have testimony service so that folks can recall and tell what God has done for them, how He saved them and set them free, so that it's fresh in the mind by the telling of it over and over again. And I never grow weary of folks talking about how the Lord dealt in their hearts and saved them. I rejoice in the testimony service. But nonetheless, we see that by this time, that experience with Daniel has lost some of the sharpness of it. And since that time, we are looking in the time frame of about 20 years. There were three invasions that the Babylonians made into that southern kingdom of Judah. One was made in 606 B.C. or thereabouts. And this is the one where Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were carried captive. About 10 years later, 597, you have then another invasion, and this is the time that Ezekiel, as you have the prophecy of Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel, would have been carried captive, and they had been set up over by the river Chebar. And then in 586, there was total devastation and destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the temple site itself, and the principal houses of Jerusalem would have been destroyed. And in each one of these campaigns, Nebuchadnezzar has been successful. He's not met any measurable resistance that would have stopped him in his process. And with the thinking of a heathen, he very well may have thought that his God had just gotten stronger. Now, you and I understand that our God does not change. This is one of the debates I have with one of the major cults of this land. When one comes by, always challenge them. Lassant came by, tried to deny this, that he believes God's changing and progressing. And I said to him, don't tell me that. I said, the last two of you that were here expressed that as a firm part of their faith. I said, so don't even try to tell me you don't believe it, because I know you do. He said, well, yeah, I do. But what's wrong with it? Well, I pointed out to him that if God's God, He doesn't change. I'm the Lord thy God, I change not, he said to Israel of old. And so, this heathen, though, would not understand that. He would have thought that his God could change and could become stronger. So now, he's going to challenge the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as his name is, and the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as well as Daniel. But anyway, he set up the image. And in verses 2 and 3, we have the crowd that's called. And it's just a great host. There were rulers of varying authority. And you can just read through the list. And these varied names that are given here are the rulers that were called to this would have been in varying authority. But it was a broad... And invitation is not a good word because they didn't have any option. They were going to come. They were going to attend. Either that or they would be dead. That was basically the issue at hand. But the rulers of, and I put rules, but it's rulers. Put an R in there. R-U-L-E-R-S. Rulers of varying authority are called. And there were the people, of course, that were associated with the law. And some of these, when you look into the significance of the word, it would have involved those that would have been dealing with the law of the land and establishment of law. So it was a mixed crowd, but it was a people with a measurable amount of authority that are called to this particular meeting. And then the command to worship is given in verses 4 through 6. It is a command and not an option. You'll notice that in the text, that whatever time you hear to the orchestra play. You had basically wind and stringed instruments in this band or orchestra that we're going to play. And whenever you heard that, then that was the signal to just bow down and worship. But it's a command. It's not an option. And the penalty is given as well. They said, if you don't, there's that fiery furnace and you'll be cast into it. That's not too difficult to understand. That's pretty discernible. And so the crowd in verse 7 worshiped, and they bowed down to this idol. Now there stands out, and it will sure make you stand out, even if, and the Jewish people are not normally a real tall people or extremely large people. Remember King Saul had this characteristic about him, the first king of Israel, that he stood head and shoulders above the rest of the folks. Well, you'll stand out if you're the only one standing up in a crowd that's bowed down. When I was down in Honduras, one of the trips that I made, it was a time whenever the lumbermen were protesting. They wanted to cut timber. The government said they had to quit cutting timber. So what they would do, they'd go out on a highway, major highway, which are not too many in Honduras. They'd pile up a bunch of tires on that highway and they'd set them on fire. And they'd block traffic. Well, it so happened that the day that I was to come home from Honduras, I was over in the city of La Ceiba, and I needed to be in San Pedro Sula, which was probably about between 2 and 3 hours of driving. And the plan was we were going to leave about 7:30 in the morning. My plane would leave somewhere in the early afternoon, and that'd give us time to drive over to San Pedro Sula, see the country, and get into San Pedro Sula in time to eat lunch and then go out to the airport. And well, just about the time we were ready to go, there's that black smoke rolling up. Come to find out, they've stopped the traffic. We finally went to a travel agent, and they called the airport, and they said, yes, there's a what they call a commuter plane that's going to be going from here to San Pedro Sula, but you've got to get to the airport. And the airport was just past where they had the roadblock. Well, in calling then after we got back to the house, we were with Harold and Lena Pridey down in there, I was. And as we as called, I got Harold, of course, had to do the calling. He spoke Spanish, I didn't. But the guy down there said, well, you can walk by that. And I said, yeah, I'll be the tallest thing out there. And you think I'm going to walk by people that are already mad about something else? I said, I believe not. I'm really going somewhere with this. These men stood out, just like I would have stood out. If I'd have got over the fence, walked down through the pasture, even if I'd been walking with the folks of Honduras, most of them will strike me right about here. And I'd have been the tallest target in the pasture. Well, these men stand out, naturally. Three of them, out of all this great host of people that do not bow down. And they're accused then. The Chaldeans, they're just waiting for this. They accuse them to the king in verses 8 and 9. They accused them on the basis of Nebuchadnezzar's commandment. He said, you commanded this, and they're not doing it. These are men that you put in charge in the province of Babylon. Now, in verse 12, these Hebrews, they're not going to bow down. That's a given. They've reached that conclusion already. They didn't have to debate it among themselves. They did not have to make that decision on the moment. They had already come to the conclusion that they were not going to bow down. Verse 5 says, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They weren't going to bow down. So they did not bow down. Now Nebuchadnezzar deals with the issue in verses 12 through 18. First thing, they're brought before the king, which would be logical. In other words, he said, we'll bring them here. And you'll notice that he's extremely angry. In verse 13, he said, did Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury. I think you'd have to say that probably fury is enraged anger. In his anger and his fury, then that he will deal with these folks. He's extremely angry at these Jews because they're the fly in the ointment. They're not doing what needs to be done to carry out his program. You'll hear this term, and it has been used already prior, and it will be probably used more in the future, that these folks that believe the Bible, the fundamentalists, they're really the problem of this nation. it really interferes with real education, they'll tell you. Because if they really believe the Bible, then they're not going to believe in some of the things that we're teaching in our schools. And they're just really standing in the way of progress. And that's basically the attitude here. He's extremely angry because they're stopping his program. But the Hebrews will not bow down. And he deals with the issue. He's extremely angry. And then asks the first question, is it true? Now, I've preached a series out of the book of Daniel, dealing primarily with the first half of the book. I used it on radio several years ago. Now, the gleanings from Daniel, I called it, just catchphrases and thoughts. But when you think about it, they're standing there before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he says, is it true? Is it true? Well, you have to be honest with God, it is true. We're not going to bow down. We didn't bow down. We won't bow down. And we do believe that God is God. And so if you ever want a quick devotion, just pick that phrase and you can put together a good devotion. And just with that question, is it true? I still have the message and I'll be guilty of preaching it again someday. It's true. They'll be faithful to their God. And they answer truthfully. They do not try to avoid the issue in this case because they're confronted and it involves testimony. Now, there's certain things that, and I don't want to get too far aside today, but there are some things that we would need to die for, other things that would be foolish to die for. God, through David, said of Abner, said, died Abner as a fool died. And in the process of it, David said, your hands weren't bound. And he knew Joab, that he was a tough and a wicked man. Remember that scene whenever Joab took Abner aside in the gate and thrust him under in the gate of Hebron, and which was, by the way, a city of refuge, thrust him under the fifth rib and he died. And David said, died Abner's a fool that. You don't want to die by the hand of a fool, but when it involves testimony of God, that's a different story. These men said, we've made up our mind a long time ago. We're going to worship our God. We're not going to mince words with you. We're not going to bow down, period. They have reached that conclusion, so they answer truthfully. Then Nebuchadnezzar's second question was, who is that God that will deliver you out of my hands? Doesn't that sound like Pharaoh down in Egypt when Moses and Aaron went in? Who is the Lord that I should obey him? I don't know the Lord. Neither will I let Israel go. Well, it wasn't too far down the road till Pharaoh knew who God is, and it won't be very far down the road till Nebuchadnezzar will know who that God is. And that God, by the way, has set things in motion, and I honestly believe that Nebuchadnezzar is ultimately finally saved after he goes insane for 7 years and a lot of things occur in his life that change finally came into his life. He has a sense of belief about the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but he's not willing to trust him yet. But when it comes down to it, when his sanity returns, and we'll read that in another study, that he then will be a yielded person to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these men are going to be faithful to the God that they serve. But Nebuchadnezzar said, who is that God? And they declare the ability of their God. He said, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able. Whatever is needed. I think we can put it in a couple of passages that we'd call to mind. You'll find one reference to it whenever Gabriel speaks to Mary about the incarnation, the virgin conceiving and bearing the Son. With God, all things are possible. To the rich young ruler that came to the Lord after he had finally come to his conclusion that he'd go away. The disciple said, who then can be saved? The rich man, with as well as his life was constructed, if he can't be saved, who can be saved? The Lord said, with men it's impossible, but with God all things are possible. One of the encouraging verses to me is found in the book of Ephesians. And he's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we might ever ask or think. Sometimes when you're just down in the mouth and you just seem like all hope's gone, just call to mind that he's able to do far more than you can ever even begin to imagine. And these men have come to the conclusion that he can do whatever is needful. They declare the ability of God. They said, our God's able, period. They will trust God's will and wisdom in verse 18. But if not, in other words, if God chooses not to deliver, that's the situation. Be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. That's it. They have come to that conclusion in their lives. They determine to live by their faith in that Lord that is the Lord of their lives. And so we see that these men know their God, and they know the capacity, at least in a measure, and the ability of their God. That if they can trust him, whether they understand it or not, they can trust God's will and God's wisdom. Do you realize that God's will for your life is far more important than anything that you might put together as far as a prospect of life? We'll lay our plans and we'll put together our desires and we'll look into that and say, this is the route I'm going to go. But it's best just to trust God's will and God's wisdom, because he knows far more than we do. And he knows the end from the beginning. Therefore, he can just work it out far better than we can. And it takes a while to learn that. And in the course of life, you have to have a lot of refresher courses, too, along the pilgrim's way. Just that you're reminded of that God's wisdom, God's will is supreme. And these men, they said, now, God may not choose. He's able to deliver. But if he doesn't deliver, it's just still all right. And isn't that a good place to be in your life, where that whether you live or whether you die, it's still all right? That everything will still be okay. That God's in control. Now, after this, then, in verses 19 through 25, Nebuchadnezzar commands their execution. In verse 19, he heats the furnace seven times hotter than it would want to be heated. Apparently, they had some measurable engineering in that day, and it would have had to have been some type of a blown furnace. I mean, just a natural fire will reach a certain temperature, but like the old blacksmith shops, whenever you add the air to the charcoal as it burns, it gets a whole lot hotter, and you reach a temperature where you can literally get metal red hot, and probably if you left it long enough, even melt it, but you get it hot enough that you can make a shoe fit a horse. In other words, but you have to blow that. You have to have the air moving through it. Well, I would assume that they had this furnace with some measure of engineering so that there would have been a measure of air that would produce the oxygen that's needed to heat this furnace seven times more than it wants to be heated. Now, it was an immediate sentence of death just to be cast into the furnace. But seven times hotter, I date myself with some of these statements, but it'd be like the old saying used to be where I grew up, it's like spitting on a hot griddle. There wouldn't be much left. And it wouldn't take very long that it'd be gone. And that's the case. In other words, he's seeing to it that there won't be any question, supposedly, in their minds about the death of these men. Now, Nebuchadnezzar then, so that there's not any possibility of escape, commands the mightiest men in his army. Very foolish thing. But he commands the mightiest men that he has in his army. And that's the folks you ought to try to keep around you. But he commands them, said, you take these, you bind them, and you put them in the furnace. Well, we're told that the furnace was so hot that these men were slain when they cast in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I didn't put it in the outline, didn't have the space here, but I'm going to just mention this because it does apply. The world can't walk where the Christian can. Do you realize that today? You may need to, and you can walk through the fire if God's with you. But the world can't walk there. These men, natural men, though they were the best that Nebuchadnezzar had, they cannot even get close to what God can do with that one that's yielded to Him. Don't ever question God's ability. You may speak with a stammering tongue, and you would say, like Moses, I'm just not very good at this speech business. Just don't discount God. You can do, because God is able. And in this particular case, these men, they couldn't walk where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were. Actually, they were cast in. They were carried to that. But when they were cast down into it, they began to walk. But these mightiest men, they died in the process. They were totally bound, these three that were cast into the fire. And then I put into this in verses 24 and 25, there was a surprise for Nebuchadnezzar. He expected for them just to go into oblivion, not be a trace of them. I always kind of like to go to a safety meeting now and then, even though I'm not going to dig any ditches or anything, but I like to be reminded, especially as an electrician, of safety every now and then. You need to be conscious of the fact that something can happen. Whenever this fellow cut into that gas line over here on the north side the other day, it reminded me that things can happen and happen quickly. That man was fortunate enough to live. But in one of the safety meetings I attended, they showed a blaze where actually it was a maintainer, and the fellow was actually working for a county. He hit a gas main, and if I remember correctly in the story, it burned for about 3 days, and he was on the tractor. Well, you can rest assured that they didn't have much to bury of that person in that fire after 3 days. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar expected, that this would just be in an instant over with, and these men would literally vanish in this fire. But he's surprised because now there's four men in the fire. And they're all walking. They're all walking. I'll give you just a thought about a devotion. You can enlarge on this and use it if you ever need to. But the only thing that this fire burned up was the bonds that they were bound with. Everything else was liberation. I want you to know that in Jesus Christ, we are more than conquerors through Him that loved us. And so we have then this surprise. He said, didn't we cast in three? There's four in the fire. Where'd he come from? Well, I think he's standing by old time, but he makes a definite appearance. And when you're put into the place of trial, you can expect the presence of the Lord Jesus Christ. Remember, I don't even remember which one of them it was now, but the testimony of one of the old saints, whenever there was more persecution than there is today, they had bound him to the stake and had set the fire. And there were others that were standing by that they knew that their fate would be the same in just a few moments. And from that fire, that old saint of God cried out, said, it's not so bad. You can't do that unless you know the Lord. You cannot in a natural state deal with that. But when the fourth man walks with you, then the world will be surprised. They brought him out, and everybody had a look at the men that the fire couldn't harm. Now, after this, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were promoted. Again, Nebuchadnezzar is reminded that who God is. He'd already been told before. It had been demonstrated to him in the testimony and the lives of these young men, as they were young men. Now they're on up somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 40 years of age. And it's still true in their lives that God is their God, and He's able to do exceedingly abundant above all they may ever ask or think. And so there, Nebuchadnezzar just thought the thing to do is promote them, and then he passes a decree about the God of these men. Don't speak against it. Your house will be destroyed along with you if you do. And God gives them the victory.